Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and normally I do book reviews on this show, and that was going to be the plan for this episode. Instead, there's a discussion between me and Jesse and a bit of Juliana about spoilers. The reason why is because we got together to record an SFF audio podcast, and I had already pressed record, and then we started a discussion about spoilers while we got ready to record, and mainly because Juliana hadn't finished the book that we were going to be reviewing. And and because I'd already pressed record, this hour-long conversation that we had, I thought I'd just put it out because it's a fun discussion about spoilers and games and lots of other different topics and movies and TV shows and the emotional investment that you put into these and get out of them and things like that. But it kind of all comes down and always comes back to spoilers. So I hope you enjoy this discussion, and normal programming will resume later. So here we go, unedited, just the amount of time that we had, and here we go. Jesse is wrong about this, and he never admits
it. Jesse's not wrong.
Jesse is insensitive to people about this, and I am sensitive to people about this, because I care about...
Your sensitivity is... I don't know why you do it that way, because I know a lot of people are worried about this, but I think it's because I'm approaching it from more like, I want to understand everything, not I want to entertain people.
I have never once had a complaint about avoiding spoilers. I've only ever had complaints
from me.
What? Except for you and like one other person who doesn't listen to the podcast. I've never heard anyone who actually thinks the podcast would be better if I just talk about what happens at the end or, you know, give away massive spoilers. If people have read the book, they know what I'm talking about if I talk about something obliquely. If they've not read the book, they'll discover it when they read it, and I don't need to take away that element of surprise. I don't need to take away that element of discovery. I don't need to take away that... People can't feel clever working out endings of book if they know the endings in advance. They can't feel stupid having not worked out the endings of books if I tell them the endings in advance. I don't want to take away people's being able to be surprised, to be able to feel stupid, or be able to feel good about themselves. Anyway, I don't need to go into this more, because there's literally nothing you can say. There's no logic that you've ever used which has changed my mind on this.
So, well, especially if you don't let me speak.
Yeah, you've got nothing to say because you've never convinced me.
You keep saying I have nothing to say.
Yeah,
but I haven't been able to say anything, have I?
Okay, if you can convince me in 2 minutes' time,
I cannot
why I'm wrong.
You,
go for
because
it.
Because we are working with different paradigms.
Yeah, I'm working in a paradigm of not wanting to ruin other people's enjoyment.
That assumes that it can be ruined.
I assume that people can enjoy a podcast of mine and I can talk about a work in great depth without depriving them of the emotional journey that they will take going through having not read it before and not knowing what's coming up story-wise. And I think that's an important aspect of reading any book, is the discovery of the process, you know,
it
of the story
be.
As you go through.
It can be.
Yes.
It can be
and
important.
If it isn't, it doesn't matter. You know? If it isn't, it doesn't matter. But in this case, Juliana wants to know how it ends, and there is a surprising ending or an ending that you probably won't see coming. And why should we deprive her on that? If other people have read the book already, they've already had that experience.
No, almost nobody will have read this book.
Yeah, so why should we deprive them of that? The enjoyment of discovering the ending? I just finished this like an hour ago, and it was a different ending than I expected, and I enjoyed that. I enjoyed reading up until that point and discovering that for myself as the story went along, the emotional journey that I went through with the character. Like, why would I have deprived that of myself? Why would I ever seek out the Wikipedia page and it spoiled for me? You know, why would I ever go in that direction?
Because you're interested in the ideas, not in the adventure.
I'm interested in the adventure and the ideas. Why would I spoil the adventure just to get short circuit and get to the ideas first?
Because the ideas are more important than the adventure.
Yes, why would I deprive myself of the adventure to get to the ideas first? I read the book anyway. I was going to read the book anyway.
The novel is an idea delivery mechanism.
It's also an enjoyment, an emotional delivery mechanism, Jesse. Nothing you're saying is...
The ideas are the enjoyment.
What's that?
The ideas are the enjoyment.
And the story is the enjoyment, and the emotional ride that it takes on is the enjoyment, and the discovery process, and the surprise that comes along with it. And all of these things which negate.
But often, the emotional payoff is the only payoff in many books, right?
Yes.
That's, that presumes that there is some sort of lack of ideas.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it does.
Jesse, I'm not negating the lack. I'm not negating the ideas. I'm saying, why deprive yourself of the emotional and adventure and surprise and all these other kind of things? All these other emotions.
It deprives me when I read a Wikipedia entry before I read a book. I can be pleasantly pleased with an ending of a book, even if I know it in advance.
Yeah, you can be pleasantly pleased with it, but you won't be surprised by it. It won't come as a shock. There's nothing to shock or surprise you anywhere. Why deprive yourself of the surprise and shock emotions? They're totally valid emotions that an author can bring out from a reader. And why deprive yourself of that?
They can still be appreciated.
No, but you won't experience that emotion and that shock and that surprise. You won't get it. And that's what I'm saying. I don't want to ever...
It's true that you will not be surprised by things that you already know about.
Yes. And why not...
The scale of things that are interesting, those are very low.
No. Well, the thing is, why deprive yourself of them?
Because there are billions of things to read.
Yeah.
Trillions of books.
Yeah.
And most of them are shit.
And of the good books. And of the good books, Jesse. Okay, Jesse, you're not convincing me at all. You're not even slightly coming close to even approaching convincing me about this spoilers. And you never have done. And I guess you won't.
I understand that. But
I can't deal with that. If this is what you guys are going to talk about,
This isn't the podcast.
No, but this is annoying.
No, because Jesse doesn't care about other people's enjoyment in that way. And that's why I'm going to do this.
I don't.
Okay.
I don't care about that.
But let's just say up front that this is a book club episode, and we're going to presume that everybody else has read at least most of the book.
I think Juliana's right, because I don't want to change the format, because I think censorship of that kind is actually foolish. It hurts your podcast. I mean, I don't say that to you every time, because I understand that that's your philosophy. But, for example, when I'm listening to you guys talk about a book that you're presuming everybody has read, it's much more interesting than when I'm listening. Because most of the time, I'm not going to read those books.
Okay.
Right? And I think that that's true of a lot of people, that they are just never going to read a lot of the books that people are talking about. Certainly, that's the way a lot of the movie podcasters go as well. Not that there's that many book podcasters, but... The movie podcasters do that as well. They just assume that people have read it.
What's a movie podcaster? Sorry, I don't understand that one.
Oh, well, there's a lot of movie podcasts where they just tell everything that's going to show up. They call it this one.
Well, I don't, there was lots of podcasts that I, you know, subscribe to, or the things that, you know, they're just going to discuss some work of art. Or like it could be a book or a movie.
This dynamic that has grown up.
Yeah, but I'm just saying
I don't listen to those episodes, Jesse.
I don't listen to episodes. If they're talking about a movie that I've not seen, I'll make sure I watch the movie first and then go back and listen to the episode. The episode will be there, you know, I'll still be able to download it in 2 years' time once I get around to watching the movie. The movie podcasts that I listen to are ones like the Kermode and Mayo podcast, which is discussing about movies and talking about movies that are coming out, and they always avoid spoilers. And I don't think I can recall a single time in about maybe 15 years of listening to these guys discuss movies where they've ever, like, in a movie that's just come out or even that's a year old, say spoilers that have spoiled anything for me. You know, there's never been a twist revealed that I can think of, you know, and that's why I listen to that podcast. That's why I listen to those guys talking about it. And if there is an episode talking about movies, when I know it's the style of podcast, I will enjoy it after I've watched the movie, and I'll enjoy the discussion about it. But I never go the other way around, you know?
Yes, but generally those movies, they tend to be the ones I'm talking about, where they say, you know, the spoiler this. They tend to talk about, like, they're specifically talking about shitty movies. And they enjoy watching shitty movies.
Well, I don't enjoy watching shitty movies. I don't enjoy hearing people talk about shitty movies either.
Neither do I, which is why I tend not to listen to those podcasts. But there's a lot of them. The thing is the talk about what we're not going to talk about is incredibly uninteresting. There's a lot of really bad podcasts, and I don't want to do any of that. Like that meta talk about basically all this stuff we're talking about now can't be in a podcast for me, because I would not. Just like I already understand. Everyone already understands their point of view on this, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, I have a philosophy that I will either say up front that we're going to talk about the full work, and we presume that someone's going to do it. But then I won't, you know, I won't talk about what's in. It's a completely different kind of discussion then.
Yes, I agree. So I think Yulianne is right. We should wait until she's done.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can schedule that for a time that isn't Sunday, because I already got two.
Yeah.
Scheduled in a week. In Sunday. A week would be perfect.
A week Thursday?
1st of May, yeah.
Let me just look. It should be all right.
Maybe. Let's see if we can get someone else on board as well, so it's not just the three of us.
Well, Mr. Jim Moon's on vacation, so he's back by then, we might be able to get him. Let's see.
No problem. But the thing is, it's that, like, I understand what you say about spoilers and things like that. Like what you don't like about podcasts and other people who reviewing who talk about avoiding spoilers and things like that. You know, I agree with your...
It's the least best part of your show.
What's that?
When you say, no, we've got to stop talking, we can't... And I'm not going to tell you, you know, this part, I'll spoil it a little bit, I don't want to spoil it. Like, that's the part where if I was an editor... I would go in and just snip out. It's like in writing, right? You don't writing a review. You don't have to say I'm not going to spoil it. You just don't spoil it.
Yeah, I understand that, but I think it's like I just drop that in as a guideline to people to people listening that I am actually only ever talking about like half of the aspects in a book. You know, I people say to me, it's like, oh, why didn't you talk about that character or this character or that character? It's like, yeah, I talk about what I find interesting in a book. And, you know, and there are sometimes there's whole storylines in books which I won't touch on. And people say, why didn't you touch on that? And it's like, well, that, you know, I'll leave that for people reading the book to discover themselves, you know. And I you know, it's just a balance that I strike. But again, I'm never going to, like, force anyone to pause my podcast or stop listening to my podcast because they haven't read the book in question. Just because I, you know, if they're happy to listen to a podcast that has spoilers in it of something that they've not read, fine. But that's not my decision to make for them, you know.
How is it your decision to make for them? They're the one who's. It's not like you're reaching into their iPod and forcing them to listen to it.
No, I'm saying that anyone can listen to pretty much any episode of my podcast. And not have to worry about it spoiling their enjoyment of future books that they read in terms of the things that I've talked about before. Feeling clever about working out the ending. Feeling stupid about not working out the ending.
Part
to be shocked
issue,
by what happens.
Is,
to be surprised by what happens.
Is the word itself, right?
What?
The part of the issue is the word itself.
What, spoilers?
To spoil is to destroy, make unusable, right?
No, the word now means giving away parts of the story which you...
Yes, but a lot of people... don't understand that.
Okay, well, that's the meaning that I'm using in all my discussions about it. If you don't want me to use the word spoilers, I should say I don't want to give stuff away to ruin people's enjoyment of it. That's what I'll just say.
Well, but the thing is the word magic of it makes it think that people like think it's really important. Don't spoil the movie for me. So, by the way, guys, I watched Gravity.
Yeah.
I knew all about everything before I watched it, and I was pleasantly surprised by how much everybody's talking about what the spoiler was not a spoiler in any sense of that word.
What was the spoiler?
When George Clooney turns up and he's not alive, it's a dream, it's like a sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not a spoiler.
Well, I think that was blown out of proportion because it's such a popular movie, and that is the only surprising thing that happens. You know what I mean? That's the only thing that you can... That's the only thing that...
Let's see. The main character in the movie makes it through to the end of the movie. This is unbelievable. I cannot believe it.
No. The thing is, that's why I think when we talked about it before, I said... It's just a disaster story that's set in space. Someone is in a bad situation.
I think I hadn't watched it before. But I can tell you that I think that it's got something.
What do you mean?
Julie and Scott talked about it, and when they talked about it, they talked about the beginning, the middle, and the end. They used the spoiler word, but kept talking about it, right?
Yeah.
And when they talked about it, I happened to listen to it, to their talk about it after I'd seen the movie. I was like, oh yeah, now that you point those things out to me, that's really good. That's interesting stuff. A lot of the symbology going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there, yeah.
Yeah, it's really good stuff.
Have you a new movie coming up here in Europe called the Transcendent.
Yeah, I heard somebody is going to see it.
No, yeah, Johnny Depp and
don't know about it. Some, is it out now?
Yeah, it comes out into the cinema now.
Don't spoil it for Luke. Did I tell you the story my experience that made me think that spoilers are bullshit?
You probably told me the story before, but okay. Go ahead while I'm eating.
I watched Aliens in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my god, this is the best movie of the 1980s. Maybe the best movie ever. I was a teenager at the time. So
it's still one of the best movies ever.
It's a pretty fucking awesome movie, right? And I thought, oh my god, this is great. And then, I guess, in the early 90s, Alien 3 was announced. And I was like, oh my god, this is going to be the greatest movie ever. And then I heard, oh, it's got some good directors in it. And
David Fincher, he's a great director.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I was like, okay, what I'm going to do, I'm going to avoid watching trailers. I'm going to, you know, cover my ears when people start talking about it. I'm going to, if I see anything in the newspaper, I'm going to look at that page.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to go into this movie fresh.
Yeah.
Right? And I went to see the movie and I was like, what the fuck is this shit?
Warned about it. Jesse, I understand that. The thing is, for movies, it's different in a way. Because a movie is, I don't want to say disposable entertainment, but you can put in just, you can just put in a few hours and get the movie. With a book, it's a much larger time investment.
It's not only that. It's also, I think a book is more often, like, I know it's probably, people will hate me for that, but I think it's more of an art form.
A book.
Where people try out things and in an artistic way. And when you read a book, you want to see everything the first time with your own eyes, with your own emotions.
Well, your own imagination, sure.
With your own stuff. But if somebody had told you how it happened before, like what will happen, you have already something in your head.
Yeah, that's happened to me many times.
You already have established something in your head. And
if you've seen a movie, right? You've seen the movie version, then you read the book.
It's more than that. It's also just knowing kind of what the style of the book. Like, I really do enjoy going into a book quite fresh.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's sometimes I read a book and I was like, oh, this is actually a lot funnier than I was expecting. And if someone had told me, hey, this is the funniest book ever, and you read it and you're like, actually, that wasn't very good. And you can kind of be let down in some ways, you know.
Right. And so what I would say, the most important thing is not to, you know, tell people the ending. It's to tell them what it's about. Tell them what is going on.
Well, that's what I always explain. That's what I always talk about in my book. I spend most time talking about what the book is, like the ideas of the book.
That's why it's good, even though you don't sometimes talk about things that would be useful
The podcast I really hate, and not the podcast I hate, but I mean, I can still quite enjoy some of the discussion if it's something that I actually like, you know, a movie that I like. But what I really don't like is when they say, oh, okay, here is the movie, and okay, what happens at the beginning? This happens, and then there's this character, and this person comes along, and then this character, you know, Wally Pfister, he's the cinematographer on the Batman movies and Inception and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's his first.
It's his first one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so Christopher Nolan. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is that when I listen to these podcasts, I'm just like, well, why are you just explaining the story again? Because like, if I've seen it,
yes,
I know this. And if I've not seen it, like, all I'm doing is getting, like, a second-hand experience of the movie filtered through someone else's brain, and not even a good one, you know. So I did listen to a few of those episodes, and there was one that I listened to up until, I don't know, I guess the Incomparable does a spoiler horn, but, you know, up until the spoiler warning or something. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, and then I actually watched the movie, and I was just, you know, it was kind of like the same kind of thing that you said with the Aliens 3, but kind of in the opposite way around. I was like, oh, I wish I hadn't have heard anything about this, you know, even though I'd not gone into the you know, quote unquote spoiler territory. You know, it was just as much of a letdown, I think, as your.
But the lesson I drew from that was the way I want to, because I think a lot of people are not fully on board with the idea that they're going to die. So they think they have unlimited time. So, like, a lot of people who talk about rereading books a lot, like, I read this book every year, and I was like, why? There's millions of books that you could read that are probably going to be, you know, add value to your life. Well, the reason they do that is because they enjoyed it, and they like enjoying themselves.
Yeah.
But...
And they like enjoy, and they read the book again because they know that they will enjoy it, rather than reading a new book and then wasting their time.
They might not enjoy it, right? Yeah. And so
which is why, if I'm not enjoying a book, I just stop reading now. Which has affected the star ratings on books that I review on the SFBRP. Kind of, it kind of artificially brings them up because, like, if I just say, oh, I'm not going to finish this,
I mean, you should. Life is something where you have to learn to do it, right? Mm. One of the things you got to learn to do is wait. No, this is bullshit. I'm not doing that, right? And as you get going, accelerating towards your death. Which I am now that I'm middle-aged, right? I gotta figure that my time is more valuable every second that goes by. So if I'm kind of a Kantian, you know, what those guys are about. If it's a rule for me, it has to be a rule for other people. Whether they want it to be their rule or not, I have to treat them that way.
Mm.
So I cannot do something that I would not want done to me.
Yeah.
And so I cannot inflict a bad podcast on them.
But this is why it's always such a, like, on the internet, there's such a big variety that everybody gets exactly the thing that's handy and good for themselves. So somebody like you offers a podcast that, like, that has, talks about everything. Everything's, you can listen to it and you're fine. If you don't want to hear that, you have other podcasts and I think it's good.
Well, I think it's good, too, but I'll tell you, what I'm much more worried about than anything else is that people don't really read. I mean, the number of... Look, if you look in the podcast section of iTunes and you look at literature, the number of podcasts that are about books that aren't about selling books...
Or writing them.
Oh, yeah, there's a book review podcast by a guy named Luke.
Yeah.
There's a podcast by Jesse that is about... books and often features books,
but it's just as often about audio dramas and audio books and other stuff.
That's a little it's always audio books, but
audio books are
relatively less common. But that's because they're, you know, they're more like movie versions of books, right?
There's this podcast that I listen to, which I actually really enjoyed. I didn't listen to every episode because I haven't seen the movies that they talk about. It's called Not Playing. And it's two people, one person who's seen a movie and the other person hasn't seen a movie, and their first season, the first 12 episodes were 80s movies. And so there's what, Karate Kid, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and they, Coming to America, The Untouchables, which I've not seen that movie, so I've not done that one.
It's worth watching.
Lethal Weapon.
Spoil it for you.
National Lampoon.
It's a historical movie.
Yeah, yeah. Don't go into it. Because I will watch it and then listen to these guys. But the idea is that they do a quick introduction before they watch a movie. So they're saying, I don't know what this movie is going to be about. Or, you know, at least one of them hasn't seen the movie. So it's, I don't know what this movie is going to be about. What do you know about it already? Oh, I've heard about this scene or that act or something. And then they watch the movie and with a commentary track, where, you know, and comment on it as they're watching it, and then at the end they do a wrap up. So it's really good that, you know, like, so you can listen to
all stages,
but you can listen to which is the bite-sized version, which is just what we discussed before we watch the film, and then immediately after the thing they go, well, I liked this, I liked that, but it's presuming it's fresh in their mind, so they're not having to, you know, cover stuff, and it presumes that you already know the movie pretty well. You know, we watched Roger Rabbit and I really enjoyed their discussion on that thing, but then if you really want their in-depth thing as a scene by scene, line by line thing, you can watch the
listen to the
full audio commentary track.
That's pretty cool.
So it's a different format, but I really like it because they do a movie discussion about a movie in, like, having not watched it to having watched it and said everything that they wanted to say, and you get the bite-sized version. It's like 20 minutes, and that's really good because so often these podcasts talk about a two-hour movie for 2 hours, and I'm just like, I just don't have time. I want, like, it was really good to listen to the one about Karate Kid because it just brought back good memories of watching Karate Kid over and over and over when I was younger. And Coming to America, which is another one of these 80s movies that I had VHS tape, which I watched over and over and over. And what's it? Let me go through. Bill and Ted's Field of Dreams. UHF. I've not seen that movie, but
it's a good movie. It's with Weird Al. It's very funny.
The Die Hard and Beverly Hills Cop, you know. So they did the first season, they said it was 80s movies, so that was like 12 80s movies that they watched. And there was only a few episodes that I didn't listen to because I haven't seen the movie, but it's literally pointless for me to listen to that episode until I've seen the movie because it's, I mean, it would be okay for me to listen to the first part where they're talking about, hey, one of us hasn't seen the movie, what do we know about it? Or what do you think you know about it? Blah, blah, blah. And then the second half, I know, will be utterly useless for me because the way that they format it, it's... For you, it's two people who have just seen a movie talking about it without even, you know, without doing any explanations to what had happened, you know, or what even what they're talking about. They'll just say, oh, that character, this, and say what they thought, or, you know. They only say something enough to remind the person that they're talking to at the time about what they're talking about, which I think is a much healthier way of doing a movie podcast where you're presuming people have seen a movie rather than going through scene by scene. Anyway.
Yeah, I agree. The feature I like on Google's Define, you know, they took over the dictionary service now for everybody. When you type in Define something, it doesn't take you to another. They just use their own thing. One of the things they've added is use over time.
Yeah.
So if you type in the word spoiler, for example.
Which he just did.
Yep. And then, Define.
Yeah, it's really popular in the 1850s.
Yeah, very interesting, right?
A flap of the wing or glider aircraft.
Early 20th century, it levels off in the 50, until the 50s, and then starts going up.
Hmm. How do they get these this data?
The Google books scanned every book in the world, so they're not just looking through newspapers.
No,
and stuff.
They haven't done all of them.
Not every book in the world. The plan is to scan every book in the world and have on file everything that's been printed.
Pretty cool.
But look at the definitions, though. It also gives us different ones, right? A person or thing that spoils something. That's pretty unclear, right? Especially in a political context. A person who obstructs or prevents an opponent's success while having no chance of winning the contest themselves.
Yeah, I think that's what... I think people mix up that definition with the next one. A description of an important plot development in a television show, etc. before it is shown to the public. You know, that's the kind of thing that, don't tell me anything about what happened in Game of Thrones this episode. But, like, I got to the end of Dexter Season 4, having it not been spoiled for me, and it literally made me feel physically ill, and Juliana and I had to watch the next episode, like, from the next season straight away, just to make sure that we weren't going crazy. And I felt ill.
Probably should watch them in like, that binge-watching. It's pretty...
We weren't binge-watching, because we were only watching it, like, one episode every few days or something. It's not like we sat down and watched the whole thing straight through. But we wanted to, you know, we wanted to make sure that we weren't going crazy, that thing that just happened actually did happen. But if that had been spoiled for me beforehand, I wouldn't have felt sick for 2 days afterwards because of what happened in the movie. And I liked that, no, in the TV show, and I liked that feeling. You know, I liked...
Feeling sick.
No, I appreciated on many levels and enjoyed the feeling
that they were able with a
TV show to make me feel physically ill and just distressed in that way, and it was very clever. And it wouldn't have worked in a movie because I wouldn't have been able to get to know those characters and what happened. I wouldn't have cared about what that happened to them. But if I had known what happened and I went through, for example, I watched. Have you seen Firefly and that stuff?
Yes, but I wouldn't mind you spoiling it if I had.
I'm just saying that I watched the movie Serenity before seeing Firefly because I didn't realize it was a tie-in to a TV series. And I watched Wash die before I saw him before I saw him being introduced as a character. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I went and I was watching it for the first time with Pola, and we went through the whole thing, and I was watching it knowing that at the end of it, Wash was going to die, and that was going to be the big emotional payoff. And in that case, I spoiled it for myself because stupidly I watched it out of order. But seeing Pola, like being like devastated by Washington. Well, not being devastated, but like when that happened, being utterly shocked because you don't expect a main character to die in a TV series or anything like that. But because it was a movie to wrap up the whole story, it was okay to do that. You had the same similar kind of reaction, didn't you? Because you didn't know Wash was going to die.
Yeah, no. Why? How could I?
Why
know?
Would it? But I'm just saying that if I'd have just told you at the beginning, oh, you see this character the first time he comes on stage and with these dinosaurs right at the very beginning, first time he comes on the screen, if you just said, ah, you know, he's the, of all of these characters, he's the character who you're going to care about a lot, but then he's going to die at the end, so don't get too attached to him. You know, I would
don't get too attached to him.
But that's the kind of thing that happens with these long-term TV shows, and that's the reason why people want to watch them as they go through, because they want to have that long-term connection. If you binge watch something and just watch like four seasons in 4 days, you don't have that long-term attachment to someone. You know, like the characters in Dexter, where, you know, I'd watch those. You know,
what about this relationship between the length of the work, the investment you put in, and the amount of, like, so when I watch a TV show or movie, I generally don't have any deep comments about it that I need to, you know, go write something on the internet about.
No, I used movies. To, I normally review a movie in like two lines, say, oh, I expected this, I got this, and that was it, you know. But that's what I say. I don't feel an investment in the characters. I mean, we watched the Catching Fire movie last night, and
So here, the point I'm trying to make is that there's something about sparking interest is more important than preventing a possible barrier to enter that work. So if we think of like reasons to consume media, whether they be book or movie or whatever, television show. Television, I mean, a lot of television shows are it's to fill time while you're eating your dinner, or it's to
all of these dramas. I think dramas, long running drama series, can be a bit more than that. But
I guess Aquanet Castle.
I will take your initial argument as read.
That's a good example because honestly, I don't really care if any of the characters die because I'm not very invested in the show. I find
what
it
with Castle
funny. The actor's, you know, he's amusing, charismatic on screen. His family, I'm less interested in. I guess the beautiful actress who I don't buy as a police detective at all.
She's just way too good looking to be a police detective.
And she also looks like she'd break if she
fell over.
You know, pushed her.
This is a funny thing, actually. This spoilers, because Juliana was watching an episode from season 5 or something, wasn't it? And you're like, oh, look at this character. And I was like, oh, so that's a new character who is doing the job of this old character. So that old character, that character dies at the end of season 4 then. And I just knew, watching those last few episodes of season 4, that exactly that character will not make it to the end. So when that character gave their life for one of the other characters to, you know, in that way, it just didn't have the even slightly the same amount of impact on me as before.
Sorry.
And Juliana, you didn't mean to do that. You were just like, oh, check it out, a different actor playing this part. And I'm like, great. So that person doesn't make it to the end of season 4. And I knew it was coming.
I didn't realize that you haven't noticed it by then.
No, because I wasn't watching, because I haven't seen any of that, because I hadn't caught up with it. And it was one of those times where I was just like, even watching through that, like as they were getting into that episode, I was like, well, this just doesn't give away that that person doesn't survive. It also gives away like major plot points in a long running mystery. And I was like, well, that person's obviously involved in this way. And, you know, there's major plot holes there anyway. So I'm not that invested in that, in the overall plots of that. You know, like I say, that is a bit more disposable for me. But the emotional impact that could have come from that character giving their life just to help this other one, just, I don't know, just wasn't there in the same way that I expected.
The emotional impact would be pretty minimal. I mean, that show is incredibly fluffy.
It's not a show for emotional impact anyway, but that one time when there could have been a little emotional, and they were really going for the emotional impact, I already saw it coming, and I was like, well, yeah, that's going to happen.
So what I'm saying is, in different media, different levels of interest need to be maintained in order for you to approach it, right?
Yeah.
For me, I'll watch the first episode of any show because I don't know what is going to be good or not. And a lot of people's tastes are different, right? So if somebody says something's good, that doesn't mean it's going to be good.
Yeah.
Because I saw The Big Bang Theory and that thing's terrible.
I've never got through an episode of that. So
yeah, it's god awful. Right?
No, I'm not saying it's bad. It's just not for me.
No, it's god awful.
Oh, is it?
But the main problem is I don't want to say no to everything, but I also can't say yes to everything.
Yeah, because you don't have that time to invest into.
For example, even if it's if it would be a really really good TV show, whatever. If they have these laughter played in, I can't watch it.
Well, the laugh tracks.
It just makes me feel really
manipulated.
You're manipulated.
Why?
Yeah.
Why should I hear other people laugh at points that I don't find funny or like I don't care so much about?
But in a live show, you want to hear other people
in
laugh.
In a live show, that's something totally different. But yeah. In these shows where they put in laughter, that's just the worst thing ever.
Well, in Castle, they don't put in laughter. They put a bass going ba-down, ba-down, ba-boom.
But that's something different.
Yeah, but it's still the sign to say laugh now.
In music, in movies... Yeah. Can manipulate you, and it should manipulate
you.
Yeah. Well, however,
that's the thing in
you should
Fire last
feel
night.
Manipulated.
That was
if you feel manipulated, then you are bad. It's done badly, right?
Yeah, but if they put in laughter, that's something totally different level
but
of
manipulation. I always like those things where they have a TV show and there isn't a laugh track and it's a drama and then they put the laugh track in and did I show you that
like
with
on YouTube
with the Big Bang Theory without the laugh track, someone's gone through and edited out the laugh track and just left in the jokes, and without the laugh track it's really uncomfortable because they're saying something and then waiting for the laugh track
later. Yeah.
And it's just this awkward pause and people are just saying nasty stuff to each other, mean stuff to each other, and then just pausing in between and you're just like, wow, that's like really creepy.
Yeah.
No, I think the time investment into something, like, for example, I reviewed Calculating God, and at the end, I just gave away the ending because I thought the main point of that, I mean, the main flaw of that book, or one of the many main flaws of that book was that in the
end... Yeah, the ending shit.
The ending shit. He goes away and God needs a spacecraft, and the whole point of the Star Trek 5 is what does God need with a spaceship or starship or whatever they say?
I think that the investment I put into that book would have been better served by me not having read the ending. Because
yeah, that's true. But me spoiling the ending would have just made you regret
reading
up.
It's not spoiling it when it's making it better.
Yeah. Actually, that is a truth. There are some books where I say, read up until a third of the way through and then stop there because it's good up until that point and don't... Like with this... the Hugh Howey Wool series, you know, the always Silo series. It's like, read the first book and just stop. Like, get those first 5 short stories, a great story, really interesting. Stop there, because knowing what happens at the end, like knowing all of the secrets, the weird stuff going on in background, will just spoil your enjoyment of, it will kind of ruin your memories of that early part of the book. So so I totally understand what you mean about that.
The other thing I noticed when I'm typing in that into Google...
Spoilers.
No, not spoiler. Just define whatever it is.
Yeah.
A lot of the words I'll be looking up. There's a sharp drop off after 19. See, it's always 1950, right? Where the upswing happens or the drop off happens.
Yeah, because that's when copyrighted work could no longer be.
It's television.
Oh, it's television. Is it?
It's television, right? Mm-hmm. Television really starts taking off in the 50s. It was around or prior to that.
But what about movies before then? Was it movies more popular?
The thing is
not at home,
can't
I guess.
Be at movies all the time, right? You have to go to work. You have to feed your family. Before that, there was radio, right? And radio still meant you would be reading stuff. But there's like a sharp drop off in sort of the use of vocab words after 1950. Like if you read H.P. Lovecraft, right? He loves old words. But actually, even the crappy writers were using pretty good words.
Yeah.
Because everybody was reading all the time for their entertainment because that was the only available option. And then what happens is 1950 happens, and then all the usage of decent vocab drops like a stone.
But you're saying the rise in usage of spoiler is counter to that?
Yes, I think that's right.
Because of TVs, spoiler got a new meaning and was used more.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe.
But I mean,
because it even says here, you know, the plot development in a television show, movie, etc. You know, so maybe that actually came more into it.
I like the third one. A news story published to divert attention and reduce the impact of a similar item published elsewhere.
Well, yeah, that's very common. It's not just news stories.
Not how people are using it.
No, right? No, and they don't use it to mean a flap of a wing on an aircraft or glider or a... I mean, they do use it as a front or rear of a motor vehicle. Yes, I guess the spoilers on cars, yeah. An electronic device preventing the unauthorized copying of sound recordings by means of a disruptive signal inaudible on the original.
I've never heard anybody use it that way.
I have heard it as not as an audio signal, but they have it on the outputs of VHS to stop people recording VHS to VHS. The TV could handle the signal, but another VHS player couldn't handle that signal or something like that. And I heard that was called a spoiler signal.
So look at this. Oops. I've sent it.
You can send me a link now.
Yeah. Put this into Google. And this is a funny one because this is the word that H.P. Lovecraft is supposedly uses all the time. He actually doesn't use it all the time. But people who talk about H.P. Lovecraft use it all the time.
When they pastiche it.
Yes.
They.
And what's so funny is after H.P. Lovecraft becomes popular, long after he's dead, now look at the use of it. It's like way up.
Yeah, I think that also has some. I think Eldritch, isn't there like a it's like a general fantasy thing now as well. I think it's in like Dungeons and Dragons and things.
Oh yeah.
If you type in Eldritch, say attack, Eldritch attack, blast per round. Yeah, it looks like it's a gamepedia. Yeah, it's like Warlock D20 Modern Advanced class is Eldritch Strike. Eldritch Blast, Eldritch Attack. So it's probably got quite a lot of stuff coming in from Dungeons and Dragons style
but
games.
But they got that through the association with Lovecraft.
Yeah, I'm saying, but most people who play Dungeons and Dragons probably won't realize that that is the root of the word. So I'm saying that part of it might...
No, he didn't invent it, right?
Like, no, I'm just saying that you're saying it comes from people now talking about Lovecraft and using Eldritch a lot. I'm saying it's probably just as much from Eldritch Attack. An Eldritch Strike.
Yes, but yes,
from
but
D&D.
They also people associate it with, like, if you say what who uses this word, they say it's Lovecraft.
So talk about Dungeons and Dragons then. How about spoilers in this way? So you're going to sit down. I mean, I don't know if you play these long games.
I have played it, but not for years.
You haven't. But just imagine if someone says, "Okay, we're going to sit down and we're going to play this really long game, and you already know how it's going to end up." Like, would you go through all the process of rolling the dice if someone could just say at the beginning, this character makes it through, this character's going to have all these health points missing, this character dies, and you're going to defeat this thing, and you're going to get this many gold coins at the end of it. Like, you wouldn't go through the process of rolling the dice because you already know what's going to happen. And
I'll tell you, when I played,
yeah,
the least interesting part to me was the dice.
But, okay, that's just, okay, I'm just using this as an example, this is an analogy.
I'm going to keep going with the story because that's not... In fact, it was so much so that I had a long walk home from school because there was no bus service out here at the time.
Yeah.
And so it would take like a 45-minute walk to get home. And after school, every day, a friend of mine and me would walk home in the general direction. We lived in the same direction. And we would play Dungeons & Dragons as we're walking home along the railroad tracks.
What, like, no to dice. Each other?
Yeah. He's like here's what I'm going to do. And I would say, okay, here's what happened.
Well,
and
I don't think you're playing Dungeons & Dragons at that point. I think you're playing a different game.
Yes. Yeah. We were playing Dungeons & Dragons. The only difference was there was no rolling of dice.
Yeah, okay.
It's storytelling. It's all storytelling,
yeah,
right?
But what I'm saying is that rolling of dice is actually the fun part. You know, we were playing...
It's
what was it?
Not.
No,
it
I'm just saying that...
It's not.
Juliana,
it's the least interesting part of the game.
Okay, what I'm saying is for most people playing that game, the rolling of the dice and not knowing the outcome in advance and them not actually having full control over the outcome is the important part. But for example, to take it all the way down to just rolling dice, Juliana and I, we played with a parents' place. We played, we call it Ludo in English. You know, it's where they got the four corners and you've got to take your little colored pieces around and into the middle. And if you land on someone, they get sent back to the start.
That's, we call it, I played it yesterday with a student. It's called Sorry.
Yeah, Sorry.
It's also called, the one we played is actually called Trouble.
Yeah.
Or, I think Trouble? No, Frustration. That's what, it's a very fun game.
Yeah, in German it's called...
It's good. is not because it rolls the dice, but because the game is well designed.
Yeah, but I think in German it's called Don't Panic. Anyway, we were playing that, and it came down to a few points where one person was like literally one dice roll away from winning, and then somebody managed to land on them. And the only drama came from that roll of the dice. And if we'd have known in advance, like, if that dice roll would have come along or not, it wouldn't have been a surprise, and it wouldn't have been, like, at one point Julian's like, don't cheer when you land on me or someone lands on me and gets sent back. And I was like, but in this game, that's all there is to cheer about. All of the narrative of the story and all of the conflicts and ebb and flow comes from people trying to make it round, rolling sixes, getting to go twice and landing on people. And you've got to cheer at those things, otherwise there's nothing to go. My point about spoilers is, if you knew what each of the dice were going to be rolled beforehand, there is no story to be discovered as they go through. And like, if you just say, we're going to play this game, but that person is going to win, there's literally no reason to go through it, you know, because you're not going to take yourself on that emotional journey. And I think that's why live sports are so important. And of all the things that people don't want spoiled is the, you know, is the Super Bowl.
I think you have, I think you've exactly nailed the interest people have. The most important thing for people who like live sports is not knowing how it ends.
Yeah.
And you know, what I think about live sports is I don't want to do anything that would make me watch it. I don't mind playing them, but the score is not really that important to me.
Yeah.
Just having fun is important.
Yeah, but and I really like
not person no. compared to most people, because most people like watching sports.
I like watching
sports. In Canada, hockey's a huge deal. I could not care to watch hockey. You couldn't pay me to sit down and watch hockey.
Yeah. But I'm just saying that because I like watching sports live, and also not knowing, I mean, I don't think I've ever watched sports not live. You know, I've never done a time delay on sports like you have to do with.
I like sports movies about sports.
Yeah. And it's always really good. I mean, that's why people like Rocky, is because you think, oh, well, of course he's going to win in the end. Ah, but is he going to win in the end? Is there even going to be a big fight at the end that he can win? You know, it's changed.
Of course there is.
No, I think what's the one at the end? The final fight isn't him in a ring. It's just him against some Russian guy in a street somewhere, I think. And it's not a title fight or anything like that. So
yeah, but it's still a fight.
It's still a fight, but it's not like it's a fight about pride, not a title fight about, you know, becoming or remaining a world champion. Like
the that. Twist is there, but it's still pretty straight ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the kind of experience that I don't want to...
Let's read about that. Somebody wrote an article recently about why Monopoly is such a shitty game.
I already know why it's such a shitty game, but carry on.
Yeah. Well, it's because it's the same reason everybody knows. It's because it rewards early luck and then punishes everybody who continues to play it because they're just going to...
Like life.
Yes. Well, no, like real, you know, capitalism. Yeah. Basically. But yeah, I was just reading Dan Carlin tweeted a FCC thing saying that they want to have, they're going to allow a private.
Like the net neutrality kind of thing.
Yeah, the net neutrality's off.
Yeah. Didn't bother with that one.
There's a good plan. Yeah, that's going to be great.
Hmm.
And, you know, what kind of internet problems I have is. When I talk to American friends, is their Comcast doesn't work properly.
Yeah.
Oh, good. It doesn't work now. Imagine how it's going to work when... Jesus. It's really bad.
Yeah.
So, frustration, a.k.a. sorry, a.k.a. the Ludo. Game you guys are playing...
Yeah.
It's a completely stupid and pointless game. But it's fun. Yeah, and the reason it's fun is it's well-designed.
Well, it's not only... It's because when Juliana said, oh, do you want to play this? I was like, oh, it's just a random dice-rolling game. And I had a different rule than they were.
Almost no skill at all. There's a very tiny amount of skill.
It's not even skill. There is a tiny amount of decision-making.
Yeah, decision-making can be strategic. Like, I didn't see I could have killed you there.
Yeah, that's actually what happened once. No, it wasn't in that game. We were playing a different game. It was I can't remember the card game one, the rummy kind of game. And I was like, I could have swapped out that red seven and didn't see it. And But the thing is, that the point that I like about, the games that I like is that if at any point one person plays better than the other from then on, or if one player plays perfectly from then on and the other person doesn't, that person who plays perfectly can win from any point in the game. For example, in tennis, it doesn't matter if someone's on match point and three sets ahead and six games ahead or whatever it is, you know, two sets and three games ahead. If they're on match point, they haven't won it yet, it's possible for the other person to come back and win it. And when that happens, that's the biggest story. And the thing is with Sorry or Don't Panic or Ludo is that at any point, it is physically possible, like, you know, theoretically possible for one person to come back and win,
mm-hmm.
even if they've got no guys in and the other person's got all the guys in, if just luck keeps going their way and skill keeps going their way. With Monopoly... Mm-hmm. Pretty much after the first two times around the board, you can kind of guess who's going to win, and then it's just playing it out. Same with, like, with soccer, with football, which I find really boring, is that at any point, probably neither side is going
to
win.
Let's look at it compared to other games. So, for example, if you were going to say, hey, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go home, crack open a beer, and I'm going to play Sorry online against the computer.
Yeah.
We would say, what the fuck is wrong with your brain?
No, but people do that. There's iPhone games where you play these games of luck against the computer all the time.
A logical, you know, I don't know, a smart person wouldn't say that's a good idea. They would say, your life must be fucking empty. And that is really sad, and you're making me really sad. Can I help you in any way?
But the only reason why playing against a human is any different is because you're reacting off their emotion. You're seeing their emotion.
Yes, exactly. When I play that game, I don't play it with adults. I play it with little kids.
Yeah.
Because little kids, so I said, I want a three, and I press the button, right? And then the dice pops around.
Oh, it's one of the ones where it's a clicky thing in the middle, isn't it?
Yeah. Right, so, and then she's playing last night. She says, I want a three, or I want a one. Give me a one. And who's she praying to?
No, and she's then, just externalizing her hopes.
When I want a three, she looks at me with like a scowl on her face. She's having fun.
Yeah.
Right? It's her having fun. That's the important part.
But if she knew what was coming up, she wouldn't have fun. And that's what happens in Monopoly. That's why Monopoly is so annoying. Because after two times around, you know.
The important part is the relationship between the people, not the outcome knowing. So I play the game even though I know it's completely retarded. Right? And I don't care how the end
I would say random, not retarded.
Completely stupid. It's like, if you don't... Only people who can enjoy this game as like a thrilling, you know, skill game are people who don't understand that it's really stupid.
Yeah.
Because it's completely random based on that. And all you have to do is pay attention to one thing to see what, you know, to take advantage of the skill. The skill level's so low.
Yeah.
That,
all it is deciding, if you've got two pieces out, deciding which one of them you're going to move. And often it's not even a...
Exactly. And that's just a middle, simple counting.
But
thing,
we also played Rummy, which is one where you've got cards in your hand and you lay them out. And the way that it works is once you've laid all the cards out, you win. And then the other people have to count up how many dots are on their cards and stuff like that. And there was one time that we played it. And Juliana got it on the first time round, which meant that each of us only had one turn. And I thought that somebody hadn't got to take a turn yet. And even though they hadn't taken a turn, they were being penalized for losing and not. And, you know, and also if you did it with the first time round, everyone has to double their scores that they get or the penalties that they get. And I was like, well, that's just utter bullshit. Like, how can you penalize someone twice over if they've not had a single chance or decision to make? They haven't had a single decision to make.
Yeah, they're not going to enjoy. It's a bad game because
it's a bad game. But it's not just that. Is if they hadn't been able to do anything and them losing came down to pure chance, it would be totally bullshit. But there is actually she could decide to pick up a card that she could see the face of, or pick up a card which she didn't know, and she picked up the card that she didn't know. So she could, all she did was reduce the chance of her getting a good card and doing better in the game, not even by 50%, but by, like, we were using two packs of cards, and she had 12 cards in her hand, and he had to pick up one. So it was sort of like, I can't even do the math in my head, but it's sort of like, however much is 200, like, 54 plus jokers, so, like, you know, 106 minus 12. So it's like, she did is reduce her chance by one in 98th or something, or one in 92, you know, whatever it was, just so that's the only thing she had to improve her chances of winning was by seeing one card and reducing her chance by that amount. And that was 196 or something. Anyway, it was just that kind of stuff when you can actually, I could actually, like, in my head, I didn't want to explain it to the guys because they were all annoyed at me for calling the game bullshit. But, like, when I can actually calculate in my head how much of a bullshit decision that she had to make, and that was the only chance that she had to stop anything bad happening to her by the time it became to her next go, you realize that that is a really bullshit game, and I would rather...
That's why you shouldn't play that game, right?
I would rather roll dice.
This,
well, there's better versions...
You need to spoil the rules.
There's now, better versions of that game.
By the way, there's a nice one that sort of defeats your idea that knowing the ending is going to hurt it.
It's not always about knowing the ending. It's about
knowing that somebody's going to die.
But it's the emotional impact. Why take away emotional, intellectual work that people can have and then don't get to have a chance to do?
The Call of Cthulhu game. This is a
Everyone dies in the end of that every time.
Not necessarily dies, but they all end up having to roll new characters at the end, right?
Yeah.
Because the guy's in an insane
asylum. The thing is, that's all I know about that game.
Yeah.
I've never played
And it's perfectly fun.
Yeah, there's a game called, I can't remember what it's called, but I've only heard about it. I've never seen it being played or played it myself. It's a zombie attack game, and you have to play someone who's trying to get away from zombies. And what you do is, to decide if you succeed in your next way of getting away from a zombie or not, is you play a game of Jenga or Yenga, and you take away a piece of the puzzle.
Mm.
And stack it on top. And you keep going and keep telling your story, like, will the zombie attack, like, will it get me when I jump into the car and you take one away? And now I'm going to, you know, try and start the car. Do I manage to start the car? Then you take it away. And you keep going, and then when the Jenga tower falls down, that's the end of the story. The zombies overwhelm you and you die. However, if you want to end the story early, it's getting a bit wobbly and you realize you're not going to succeed in your story, you can just say the most spectacular death that you want, which is going to help other people or help the overall story along better, and then just smash the Jenga tower down by yourself. So you know by the end of this story that you're telling, you're probably going to die. You're not going to be able to do the full Jenga game.
It's more like improv than it is.
Yeah, it's like, again, it's what you say. It's like a collaborative storytelling. But again, it's one of the things, you know you're going to die by the end of it, but it's how you die. It's like, what meaning does your death have? And that's why I quite like some Ian M. Banks books, because the people die at the end and their deaths kind of have meaning. And others, it's like, oh, and he's doing everyone dies at the end ending again. But the deaths don't have that meaning. They don't have that weight or import, you know. Yeah, I want a character to smash down that Jenga tower when they die at the end, rather than just go out with it's a strange thing. Anyway, Jesse, there's going to be a piano tuner turning up now, so thanks for the hour-long discussion.
I'm on the schedule page, so I want to make sure we're on the same page here.
A week today. We'll get this done.
Week today, same time, right?
Yeah, let's try it out.
All right, so that would be...
And if you can get anyone else to read the book in the next week and to join in too, so it's not just us three.
Right, May 1st, and then at 8 a.m. All right, I can do that.
I've recorded this conversation. I might put it out as a episode about spoilers, because I think it's a fun discussion. Although I think we did say Wash died in Firefly. But,
oh my God, we can't say that!
No, but I will...
A 20-year-old movie or whatever.
I will let people have that spoiler, just to prove to them... Just for them to go through and for me to prove that spoilers actually exist when Wash dies. Right then. Okay, see you later. Bye.
Bye.